now my privilege to introduce our main speaker, who comes to us from the Going to Any Lengths group in Tulsa, Oklahoma. Please welcome Dave B.
Good evening, everybody. My name is David Bray. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Dave.
And I want to thank Danny for calling me. And Danny, happy birthday. 10 years without a drink. And if you're an alcoholic, that's saying something. You know, there was a time where I didn't think I could make it 10 minutes or 10 days without taking a drink. There were many times I wanted to not drink so badly and had every reason to not drink. And I always somehow came up with a silly excuse to take the first drink. And if I'm an alcoholic, then what will happen is when I take that first drink, it sets a cycle up. Some people have spoken about it tonight, that something happens to me in a bodily sense that doesn't happen to the normal drinker. The normal drinker can go and have a drink and go, well, I think I'll stop with two, and I'll be darned, they do. And then there's the people that have to watch alcoholics. You know, and that's moms and dads and brothers and sisters and aunts and uncles and the sons and the daughters of alcoholics. And our book says, geez, that they're aghast at our actions while drinking. Sometimes the book says that, geez, we're able and intelligent and friendly when we're not drinking. I don't think I was any of those. But but then I take a drink, and the book says I might become sometimes dangerously antisocial. And there were things that I did while drinking, and I'll tell you a few of them here in a little bit, but there were things that I did while drinking that the people that were closest to me, the members of my family, my mother and father especially, they couldn't understand how their son could do the things that I was doing. And so, again, for somebody to not have a drink for 10 years, and if Danny's a real alcoholic, the idea of a real alcoholic not drinking for 10 years is amazing. Because the power of the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, see, when I got here, I wasn't looking for 10 years of sobriety. I was looking to get the heat off. I was looking to get those people off my back, stop bugging me, and then I was going to escape. Because I'll tell you, when I first walked through your doors, you didn't look like the answer. Now, it could have been the group I walked into, and I didn't know that. I didn't know that there's sometimes you walk into a group of Alcoholics Anonymous and you might not hear AA's message. You'll hear something, but what you find out is it might not be AA's message. And so there were times where I didn't think that you people really made too much sense. But because of this program and because I was fortunate enough to find somebody that I started calling sponsor that understood our illness, alcoholism, was a student of our book, Alcoholics Anonymous, and cared enough about trying to help another alcoholic get sober that I haven't had a drink for what is now 8,520 days. And that means my last drink of alcohol was on the second day of January, or the first day of January in 1981. Now, of myself, I don't have the power to do that. I don't have the power to take, I don't have the power to not drink alcohol for 10 minutes when I need to drink. The book describes insanity. The book describes the insanity of taking the first drink. Near the end of my drinking career, and I'm going to get into the career. I love the idea of a drinking career. Okay? But the idea, near the end of my drinking career, every time I drank, every single time I drank, only one of three things occurred. I blacked out and continued to do things without knowledge of them. Many of them horrendous. I passed out, which was probably a good thing. Because when you're just in a heap, you're not causing too much damage. So when you pass out, you just fall over and you're just there. People kick you, water you, whatever they do to you. All right? But you're not causing too much damage. So passing out wasn't sometimes such a bad deal. Or the worst thing that would happen, I would run out before I was done drinking. And if you're an alcoholic and you run out before you're done drinking, now you're in trouble. and now you will have to do things. Now the only thought you have of is getting the next drink. That's the only thought you ever have, is get the next drink. What do you have to do? It doesn't matter. What do you have to do? It doesn't matter. Who's in your way? It doesn't matter. What will be the costs? It doesn't matter. What human beings will you discard or commit acts of violence against? It doesn't matter. If I'm in the what the book describes of the phenomenon of craving, and if you're an alcoholic, if that's the first time you're hearing those three words in a row, see, those were words I did not hear in a complete sentence. Phenomenon of craving. What that means for the alcoholic is when I start to drink, I have a reaction to alcohol that begins to become an obsession. I must drink. I have a physical addiction to alcohol. And there is no power on the planet, no human power on the planet that will prevent me from taking a drink when I need to. I will discard anybody in the way. I will say things to you so that you're so mad at me you get out of the way or ask me to leave. I will say things to you that hurt you. I may commit acts of violence on you so I get you out of the way. You may commit acts of violence on me. It doesn't matter. Now that sounds extreme. That's alcoholism. And that's what I suffer from. And I didn't know that the first day I walked into your place. I didn't know that I have an illness, this thing called alcoholism, that probably kills more people than every other disease there is. Because most of the people that die of alcoholism, on a death certificate, it won't be listed as alcoholism. It'll be listed like automobile accident. It'll be listed as, you know, they died outside. Whatever that is.
Exposure.
Okay. We die in freezing alleys. We die in back alleys. It might be listed as a knife fight because now I need to drink and I stab or get stabbed. They will not list that as a death from alcoholism. But that's where the end point for alcoholics are. Now, some people don't come in there at the end point. Some get off the train way before the end point. But the thing that I have is this illness, alcoholism. I didn't want it. I still don't want it. If I could not have it, I'd leave. If I could not be an alcoholic right now, I'd get up and walk out of here and never see you goofy people again. But that's like saying to somebody that has cancer, that says like somebody that has diabetes, okay, pretend you don't have it. Don't do your treatment. Don't do your rehab. Don't do any of that and see how long you last. Same thing happens in Alcoholics Anonymous. Unfortunately, there's one big, big difference. There's no medical test, not a single medical test that can prove to you that I'm an alcoholic or that can prove to me that you're an alcoholic. There is no blood test. You can take my blood as an alcoholic and you can take a normie's blood and run the scan, whatever it is. There will be no distinguishable piece of information that says my blood's the blood of an alcoholic and their blood isn't. You can take a brain scan, EKG. Now, you might not find much. But there is no medical test that anybody can give us that says you're an alcoholic. Now, science is coming. They think they know. Well, you know, they're going to give you a whole bunch of hocus pocus. And if you go through a treatment center today, my God, they'll pile up all kinds of stuff like endorphin deficiency or your enzymes are a little off or, you know, maybe you need to sleep differently. They're going to come up with some type of scientific theory of why you're an alcoholic. And yet, you know what? They still have no clue that when an alcoholic drinks, they have a reaction that they can't quite grasp. So they come up with the only thing they come up with. We suggest you don't drink. And if you don't have insurance, that's $150. And if you do, your copay is $15. Have a good day. Or what's worse, they'll prescribe for you. They don't know how to cure alcoholism, so what they do is they try to slow us down. They got all kinds of stuff now to slow alcoholics down. Prozac, that's a good one. Back in my day, Thorazine. You don't do much on Thorazine. You don't drink a lot, but you don't do everything a lot. So, number one, 10 years without a drink. That's amazing. But we're not here talking about how good Danny is. All right? The power of Alcoholics Anonymous. If you're new to Alcoholics Anonymous, or you're visiting to Alcoholics Anonymous, or you're a family member of an alcoholic, welcome to Alcoholics Anonymous. This is a place where what we'll try to do for somebody who's not sure if they're an alcoholic is try to help them to determine, are you not one of us? You know, people don't come here voluntarily. They think they do. I've never seen anybody come to an AA meeting by mistake. Walk into an AA meeting and go, oh, sorry, I thought this was American Airlines. I'm going to go down to AA tonight and see if I can lift my social standing. Go see how the weird people live. Nobody walks through the door here by mistake. And so what ends up happening is that now what our book describes is the process of trying to determine if you are, if you are not alcoholic. And the one thing that I'm grateful that our program does that no other program does is we don't try to tell you you are or you aren't. That's not for us to describe. If you're here, if you're here tonight waiting for AA to just tell you you're an alcoholic, you're in for a long wait because that's not what we do here. What's happened is you've walked into a place where there are people here that have determined they're alcoholic. How do they do that? They drank themselves into that knowledge. Our book, really what it does is it says, you know what, if you're not sure, go out and try some controlled drinking. That's what our test is. If you can go tonight to the bar, take 4 shots of your favorite beverage, good long ones, get some doubles, take 4 shots and stop. And if you can do that, and then try it the next night, and then try it the next night, if you can control your drinking, you don't ever have to come back. Good day. You're wasting your time here because we're going to start saying things to you. If you say you're alcoholic, then what you've just said is you have a hopeless condition of mind and body. Because that's what alcoholism is. It's a hopeless condition of mind and body. I drink alcohol, I get that reaction that only alcoholics get. See, I have made the people of my family disgusted with me. The last thing my father said to me before I came to AA, a little over 23 years ago, the last thing my father said to me, and this was after years and years and years of just ripping his heart out, promising I won't drink, promising I'll do better. I swear to God I won't do that again. Having him come home and find his son in a puddle of his own vomit. Have come home and have all of his possessions gone. Because I steal. Because when I drink, see, work and an alcoholic are kind of things that are usually, they start to become far apart. It's a lot easier just stealing stuff. And geez, if you got a house full of stuff, why go steal somebody else's stuff? Just steal your parents' stuff. And then when they ask, do you know where it went? No. Maybe mom took it. The very last thing my father said to me was, he looked at me with, I hope I never forget this. He looked at me with such contempt and hatred. And he said to me, with a son like you, I don't need any enemies. And I deserved to have that being said to me. Because I did something to him that one person shouldn't do to another. I stripped that man of every piece of dignity he had. Because I lied and I stole and I cheated. And I'll tell you, one of the things my sponsor taught me was the worst type of thief. See, I can steal your possessions. You can get possessions back. The worst type of thief is the person who steals another human being's right to be happy. And I stole that from that man. And I stole that from my mother. And I stole that from every person that, for whatever stupid reason, hung out with me at the end. Because I have the ability to look you in the eye and tell you, I like you. You're my friend. Knowing I'm going to rob you blind when you're not looking. because when I need to drink, I'm prepared to do anything. And I didn't start life like that. I certainly didn't grow up to go, you know what, I want to be a thief. I want to be a liar. I want to be a cheat. I want to be a criminal. And I want to be somebody that has the ability to crack somebody in the skull with a pipe. I want to do those things. God, what do you want to be when you grow up? I want to be a jackass. Do you have a class for that? All you had to do is take a drink. If you're an alcoholic, just wait. Just sit back, drink, and wait. It'll happen to you. With, you know, one of the things I watch in Alcoholics Anonymous is there's some people that come in with, you know, there's some pretty intelligent people. I sponsor a hand surgeon. He's one of the top medical people in the city of Tulsa. And the man has not one lick of common sense. I tell him all the time, for a guy with high education, you're the stupidest person I've ever met. Great brain power. That power did not help him control his drinking. Got some people that are, from an athletic standpoint, nice, just incredibly good athletes, powerful people, big people, powerful people. Had no avail when it came to trying to combat the illness of alcoholism. Maybe you think you're spiritually higher than the rest of us. Maybe you had some theological training or you had some nice upbringing in the church. And maybe that knowledge is still contained within your soul and you're just amazed why that doesn't have any ability to help you not drink alcohol. And you can have all of them, some of them, any combination of them. And if you're an alcoholic, they'll be of no avail. Now, why is Alcoholics Anonymous different? Why do all those things fail? Physical ability, mental capacity, maybe a spiritual training. Why do they all fail? Because you're trying it on your own. You're trying to do it by yourself. And the one thing that Alcoholics Anonymous figured out is that no alcoholic has the ability to win on their own ability. I can try everything I've ever thought of, conceived, put all my physical might. I can sit and pray. One night I put my hands on the television set because the preacher inside told me to. I was in a drunken stupor and the man said, "We will help remove the demons. Put your hands on the set." I went to it. I put it on. Take the demons out. All I felt was that little and when I took the next shot, I knew it didn't work. So now, and I'm standing here sober. I haven't had a drink in 23 plus years. And I'm as alcoholic right now, this night, I'm as alcoholic as I was the day I walked in here. I have alcoholism at this moment. I'm going to tell you a story. Danny's celebrating 10 years tonight. I'm sponsoring a person that had a little over 11 years, and right now this person has 15 days. And at the time that this person drank, active member of Alcoholics Anonymous, committed to the program, doing the deal. So she thought. She book says if we let up on the spiritual program, we're headed for trouble. What's the spiritual program? Somebody said it tonight. Our constant thought of others. The idea of thinking of others. Now that's like Bill, who wrote our book, uses weird words. Constant. You know, there's not even a 3-minute coffee break in there. Can I have 24 hours a day? Can we do 23 hours and 30 minutes of thinking of you? Could I have 30 minutes just to me, please? Just 30 minutes of just me time. I deserve it. I want to think about me. Book says no. Now we all slip it in there. I mean, we're lucky if we get 1 hour of thinking of others and 23 hours of. And if you sponsor people, you understand. Because I don't ever get a call from a person that I sponsor talking about somebody else. Unless they're pissed at them. Here's a challenge. If you don't think you're a self-centered person, If you've ever had a group photograph where you and a bunch of other people are in the group you're in the all in that group photograph, you take the picture, who do you look for first? I don't look for anybody else. I want to see how I look. If I look good. Because if I don't look good, I'm throwing the damn picture away. I certainly don't want that hanging around. I don't look for my wife. I don't look for anybody I sponsor. I want to see how I look. You wake up in the morning. What's the first thing you think about? How you doing, Dave? Pretty good, Dave. How you doing, Dave? The committee starts talking. Gonna get a job today, Dave? Well, I hope so. So on the second day of January in 1981, I'm at my end. The book says that if you're an alcoholic, sooner or later you will drink yourself into this place. The book says that you will know loneliness as few do. If you're an alcoholic who has drank themselves all the way to the end point. Now, again, nobody here can declare somebody else an alcoholic. That's not for us to do. You have to do that by yourself. If you don't think you're an alcoholic, good day to you. Good luck. If you're an alcoholic, you have an illness that'll kill you, regardless of what you think right now. I don't like being an alcoholic. Alcoholism doesn't care. I don't have to like it. I just have to accept it. The first step says that we admitted we were powerless over alcohol, that our lives had become unmanageable. Amazing word, the first word of our first step, we. I have to decide to join you and not to stay a single entity. Because if I decide to try to win on my own, I die. Unfortunately for alcoholics, we're pretty sturdy people, and so we die slow deaths. And sometimes it's not even visible, because I haven't had a drink in a while. I'll tell you what, the worst thing for a brand new alcoholic is about 3-4 weeks of sobriety. Because then they start thinking, I've been making a big deal out of this. Because one of the traps of alcoholism is people think that it's an alcohol problem. Now that sounds weird. If you're an alcoholic, alcohol is not the problem. Because if alcohol is the problem, all I have to do is not drink it. And I don't ever have to come and sit in your chairs and laugh at your stupid jokes. I just have to not drink alcohol and go about my business. And if you're an alcoholic, maybe you've tried not drinking. Now, what our book describes is that what it describes alcoholism for the person who's not drinking. Over some considerable period when I'm not drinking, here's what will happen to the alcoholic. It happened to me every single time I tried not drinking. Over a very short period of time, it says, we become irritable, restless, and discontented. Now, those were words that my vocabulary couldn't quite grasp when I got here. My vocabulary wasn't very large when I first came to you in Alcoholics Anonymous. Most of it consisted of four-letter words and colorful phrases that began with mother. So irritable, restless, and discontented, they were nice words. I didn't know what they meant. What I found out is what they meant is I'm pissed, and I'm feeling sorry for myself. And if you live pissed and in a bunch of self-pity, that is a bad situation for an alcoholic, so I'm going to try to exert myself. I get madder, and I get more self-pity. And then I have an alcoholic mind. Now, I'm not drinking alcohol. I'm not drinking. I'm physically sober, and my life is starting to spiral downward. And my brain has an answer. There always seems to be channel two. And channel two is still here. And every so often, it'll flip over. A shot of Jack Daniels will fix that. So you put me in the wrong place at the wrong time with the wrong people, and I'm drunk. That's why somebody that has 11 years gets drunk. So on that last days of drinking, I get to the place the book says you'll be at the jumping off place. See, if all your drinking ever got you was a little inconvenience, this program of action that I know that this group and my group in Tulsa tries to basically share with the new people is extreme. Alcoholism is an extreme illness. It not only kills the alcoholic, it damages the lives of the people that the alcoholic twists. In fact, I have seen myself people that aren't alcoholic die from alcoholism. They're so tired of watching alcoholism, they can't stand it anymore. And so they take the ultimate sacrifice that our book describes. What has to happen? What has to happen? Number one, you got to drink yourself there. If you haven't drank yourself to that place of hopelessness, you have no idea what I'm talking about right now, and you're going, this guy's just a nut. Is this meeting almost over? God, he's pissing me off. Or if you're an alcoholic, maybe you're still pissed. Because I'll tell you, what our book describes is the end point for alcoholics. It says, what I want is I want to not be one. And the book says I have a delusion that I'm like other people. I do not have denial. If you're using the word denial, you're coming out of a treatment center or you just don't know a damn thing about Alcoholics Anonymous. The book says I have a delusion. It's a false sense of reality. The book says I suffer from the delusion I'm like other people. I'm like a normal person who can drink and stop. And one day I think I can beat the game. That is the delusion that an alcoholic of my type suffers from. That I can beat this thing on my own. That I'm going to muster up some willpower, some intellect, or some training that I've had, that I can beat it, and I don't have to put up with this nonsense of sponsorship that goes on around here. I'm not going to work your steps. I can't stand your window shades with all that gibberish on it. I ain't making no inventory. Now, what has to happen? Book says I'm going to have to come to that place where that has to be smashed. The delusion I'm like other people has to be smashed. And the only way that that gets smashed is you have to drink yourself there. I had to drink myself to that place where I knew that on my own I had no chance of winning the game. And I finally got there. And I surrendered. I said on the second day of January something I've never said out loud ever. And I said it to the man who hated me. I said, if I'm going to stop drinking, I'm going to need help. See, when you grow up like I grow up, asking for help is not even an option. If you're a man, act like it. Don't tell anybody you're afraid. Don't tell anybody you have any weakness. By God, prove that you can do it by yourself. And unfortunately, that's suicide for an alcoholic. I said those words, if I'm going to stop drinking, I'm going to need help. And from that day to this day, I haven't had a drink. Now, just because I said the words isn't the reason. I said them this morning when I got up. If I'm going to stop drinking, I'm going to need help. If I'm not working your program, if I'm not going closer this way, I'm going backwards. And that's what happens to people. Sometimes they come to meetings and they sound like they're doing well. How you doing? Fine. They perfect the fine. Doing okay? You bet. Where'd so-and-so go? He's drunk. Oh. If you're not an alcoholic, you don't understand that. If you go to Alcoholics Anonymous, we see it all the time around here. We see it all the time because the odds of getting sober aren't very good. Just because today, with all our medical advancements, people who get cancer, most of them die. People who get, people that have all those illnesses, they die. We have some success, but we have a lot of failure. Alcoholism is no different. We have an extreme program of action here. Doctor, somebody's dying, got a severe case of cancer. Probably your odds aren't going to be very good. We have a drastic treatment. Are you willing to take it? God, if it can save my life, I'll take it. The odds are 20%. Are you willing to take it? God, I'll take it. Because if I don't do it, I'm dead. Alcoholics Anonymous has a drastic set of proposals. Most of them say, I don't need that. That's how funny our illness is. Because I'm not drinking. And then the people who don't understand us, the people that are well-meaning, say things like, how long do you got to go to those stupid meetings? Are you ever going to be able to not go? No, got to go. About 16 years into my sobriety, my parents stopped asking me finally. I hadn't had a drink for 20 years. I went to see my parents. I've worked all our steps. I've made my amends. And I'll tell you a little bit about that. But one of the things that's happened is my parents trust me again. I have a relationship. The man that hated me. I mean, I'm not talking about just doesn't want to sit in the room with me. This man hated me. Today when we have conversations, the conversations ends with, "Dad, I love you. Dave, I love you." Now that may not mean a lot to you, but I didn't think I'd ever have that back. And I didn't deserve to have it back. I don't deserve anything that's good and decent that comes from Alcoholics Anonymous. Because if I start to believe I deserve something here, then I go beyond what's actually here. This is a privilege. I don't have any right to anything that goes on here. It's a privilege to be an Alcoholics Anonymous. If you don't treat your sobriety like a privilege, you ain't going to have it long. I don't have any right to anything that goes on here. Why wouldn't I want to dress up a little bit? Why wouldn't I want to show up a little bit early and help set your chairs up? Why wouldn't I want to stay late and help clean up? Why wouldn't I want to call a sponsor and tell him the truth about myself instead of lying to him and tell him everything's fine? Josh, who read How It Works Tonight. One of the things he read, right in the beginning, right in the first paragraph, it says, "Those who do not recover." Second sentence in How It Works says, most of us aren't going to get it. Those of us who do not recover are people who cannot or will not, here comes the key word, completely give themselves to this simple program. Now, completely when I was new wasn't much. Completely when I was new was find the building. It didn't matter if it was late. Just find the building again. That's a successful day for me when I was new. God, I found the meeting. It's almost over, but I'm here. Completely as I have gotten more sober means more and more. Then it goes on to say this. For whatever reason, there's some people that aren't going to die. Most of the people that have alcoholism die from it, even the ones that come through these doors. Unfortunately, most alcoholics don't even get here. They just die out on the street. They die in insane asylums. They die in back alleys. They die in houses. They die in nice automobiles. They die all over the place. That most people just die because something isn't happening. But what it says in our program, and one of the things that Josh read, is they don't have the ability to grasp and develop a manner of living which demands rigorous honesty. Now, there's a word there that I hate. I rebel. I'm a rebellious so-and-so. Somebody says white, I say black. Jump. I'll tell you what my favorite phrase drinking was. I had a shirt with that made on it. Demands rigorous honesty. I looked up the word. Again, I have a bad vocabulary, so a lot of the words in our book, I don't know what they are. I have to look them up. The word demand. One of the definitions in one of a college dictionary says, request with no option for refusal. Ooh. Ooh. That means I have to get honest. I have to start telling somebody about my bad life. I have to be honest. Our program says we're going to start doing some things that normal people don't have to do because they don't do the things we do. So I had to start telling a sponsor all this stuff I did, all these resentments I started to that I gathered. You know, the inventory, 4 and 5, best description I've ever heard of that is, you know, when we're out there in active alcoholism, we do something bad. We do a bad action. We lie. We steal. We cheat. We commit violent acts, whatever they are. And I don't know what to do with them. So I come home, and I don't know what to do with this, and I'm guilty about it, but I don't want to look at it. So I take it out, and I open the back door, and I throw it out in the backyard, and I shut the door and draw the blinds. Don't look at it. It's not there. And I do that over the lifetime of my drinking career. Drinking career. Nice phrase. One of my goals in Alcoholics Anonymous is to issue, like, you know, the baseball cards, flyer baseball cards with the career. You flip the card over and it's got your stats on the back. 1981, DUI, lost job, lost house, you know, kicked wife in the head. Before and after shot, that'd be good, you know. Ooh. Oh. But over my drinking career, now I get sober and sponsor says, okay, we're going to do inventory. So now he comes over to the house and he draws the blinds. And I look out in the backyard. It's a big pile of crap. I mean, it's my alcoholic life of all my bad actions. It's a big pile of crap. Fourth step is going out there in the backyard by yourself and taking that big pile of crap and making them a lot of little piles of crap. And you're going to stick a red flag in each one of them and label it. Resentment. Resentment, fear, sex, resentment, fear, resentment, fear, sex. Now you look out in the backyard, it's not one big pile. It's 1,000 little piles with 1,000 little red flags. Fifth step is getting somebody stupid enough to go out into the backyard with you while you tell them about every little pile. And when you're done, what you have discovered, because my sponsor, while he was out there, while I was reading all my little red flags to my sponsor, started telling me about his piles and the things that he's cleaned up. And he provided something I haven't had in a long time. He gave me a gift that day that I didn't believe I would ever get back. He gave me hope that maybe I don't have to drink again. And that's what we give each other here. See, if you're not alcoholic, that doesn't mean a thing to you. But if you're an alcoholic and you have tried on your own hundreds of times to not drink, and all of a sudden you find yourself with some hope that maybe you don't ever have to take a drink ever again, that's a priceless gift. I didn't realize the magnitude of the gift of a day of sobriety. One day of sobriety can be a week, and a week can be a month, and a month can be a year, and all of a sudden you look around and you got 10 years. And in those years, if you're working our program, what you start doing is you start repairing all the damage done. Because in 6, 7, 8, 9, what we're doing is we're going to try to grab some strength from this power that we had been blocked from. AA's message is this. If you work our steps, the first part of our 12 steps says you can have a spiritual awakening. You can be reintroduced or you can be for the first time. It doesn't matter. Some of us have some upbringing in church. Some of us don't have nothing. But it doesn't matter what you do. It doesn't matter how you come through our doors. You can be introduced to the God of your understanding, either again or for the first time. That you can have a personal relationship with the God of your understanding. See, there was a time in my life that that's what I wanted, and I knew I couldn't have it because of all the things I had done. I knew that there was no possible way that God would want to have anything to do with me because of the wretch I had become. And what happened was, is that man on that day provided some hope. I don't know if you've ever had your apartment or your house so dirty you were kind of embarrassed to invite anybody over. I don't know if you've ever had an apartment like that. I had one. You're so embarrassed because it's so dirty. You want to come over? No, you can't come over. It looks like crap. My soul was like that. I wanted to have God in my house and I couldn't because it was so dirty. I felt like a hypocrite. So what 4 and 5 allow me to do is clean house. But all it did is label. Right now, all I've done is I've labeled all those piles. Guess what? Now I have to repair. 8 and 9 says I'm going to have to go out into my fellows and make amends. That's what separates the men from the boys around here. I'm going to have to go repair damage done. I didn't think it was possible to repair the damage done that I had done to my father. The man hated me and had every right to hate me. On my 15th year AA birthday, my wife got sneaky and she flew my parents in. And they got to witness Alcoholics Anonymous. They got to witness what went on here. And the men looked like gentlemen and the women looked like ladies. And there wasn't vulgarity and there wasn't profanity and there wasn't goofy stuff. It was ladies and gentlemen, and they were saying things about this man's son that he had never heard. People were getting up and talking about how grateful they were for what their son had done in the lives of somebody else. And on the Sunday after that weekend was over, I took my parents back to the airport and my father pulled me aside. 15 years later. And he said, There was a time where I thought maybe you had a promising golf career. But it's obviously after this weekend that you've been called to a higher order. And from that day to this day, my father and I have had a relationship that I didn't think I'd ever have back. It took some time. It took time of actions that my sponsor told me to take. Every time I went there, I didn't steal. That was a key. It was a big piece of the puzzle. That I stopped lying to him. It was a key. That I talked with them to him with some respect instead of like he was some piece of trash. It's an amazing deal. And I didn't think I'd ever get something like that back. But the power of this program gives that to us. But it only gives that to us if I have somebody who can teach me how to do it. I can't look at those steps and figure them out. I can't by myself read those steps and go do them. I need somebody to guide me. And that's what we call sponsor here. So if you're new and you're just getting started and you're not certain, but you want help, that's all it starts. That's what it starts with. You want some help. Because the men of this group and the women of this group, they want to help. If you want help, we want to help. If you're tired of living the way you live and you want a way out, we have it. And we want to help you. If you don't want it, book says don't waste our time. I wish it was for everybody who came through our door, but most of the people, they don't want to stay long enough for this to happen. They want some quick fix. We seemingly are in the society of extra strength. I'm going to go someplace where there's extra strength. You got a 12-day program? I got stuff to do. Bye. Don't work that way. One more time, what it says is they don't have the ability to grasp and develop a manner of living. What we have here. See, my life drinking was a manner of living. My life drinking was a lifestyle. I gave everything to it. I gave my soul to it. I gave it up. I gave everything to drinking. I didn't know that's what I was doing, but that's what I did. I gave it all to drinking. I had a lifestyle of that way of life. And it took me to the gates of insanity. My program, my Alcoholics Anonymous is a lifestyle. I don't fit AA into the rest of my life. I fit my life into my commitment to AA. My boss knows I'm a member, if I had a boss. I'm between jobs. I had one job for 18 years and they said, bye. Of course, when you're not doing your job, that's what they say to you. So, but the people that I worked for knew that I was an alcoholic. And they knew that I was a sober member of Alcoholics Anonymous, and they knew that it meant a lot to me, and that I would have to leave if need be. My wife knows that I'm an alcoholic, and that, believe it or not, and she doesn't like it a lot of the time, but my sobriety is on the ladder one rung above her. Because I promise you, if I drink, I'm going to kick her to the curb sooner or later. Because sooner or later, I won't have place for her if I'm drinking. Now, that may sound extreme, but I'm an alcoholic of the extreme nature. So my sobriety is one rung above her, and she understands that. Now, she's a member of Al-Anon, and her program is one rung above me, and I understand that. And we've had a life of Alcoholics Anonymous and Al-Anon, and I don't know anybody who lives better than I do. She sponsors a lot of gals in the Al-Anon program, and I sponsor a bunch of these guys in the AA program, and these guys mean the world to me. I've had the privilege of sharing the life of these men. I've got to hear their inventories, and their deep dark, they've given me the privilege of hearing their deep secrets, the things that they were going to take to the grave. And because of the power of this program and the knowledge of our literature, we can walk into this thing called hope. And because we have some hope, we gain some strength, because we watch it work in each other's lives. That's why doctors can't help us. They want to treat a spiritual illness with a pill. Alcoholism is a soul sickness. Our book describes it as a perverse soul sickness. You cannot treat a perverse soul sickness with a chemical. What you have to provide me is, if my problem, if you take a spirit out of me, have you ever gone to the liquor, have you ever passed a liquor store? I know you've gone to a liquor store. Some of them actually say wine and spirits. That's kind of fun. Spirits. Why don't they just say drunk shop? Have a puke on us. Because that's what it is for me. Wine and spirits. Well, that's what it is. I pour that stuff into me. It's a spirit. It filled a hole that I didn't know I had. And that when I poured booze into me and it filled that hole, unfortunately it turned on me and started me eating me from the inside out. So now you say, don't drink. You take a spirit out of me. If you don't replace a spirit with a spirit, I'm dead. What we have here is a spiritual way of life. What we have here is one alcoholic helping another alcoholic. We reach our hand out to the suffering person who doesn't know the way, and we say, if you follow us, we can guide you, and we would want to do that. But it's going to take a commitment on your part. My sponsor told me, I will not ask you twice. If you want what I have and you're willing to go to any length to get it, then I'll teach you. But I'm not going to ask you. I don't beg anybody to get sober. You want to drink and die, go. Now, that's pretty much on the line. So I followed that man. And I followed that man for a long time, and he passed away about 8 years ago, and now I got another guy that's on the path. If 8,500 days sounds long, double it, because that's what my sponsor has. He's 40-some years sober. He's an active member of Alcoholics Anonymous. He's as alcoholic today as he was when he got sober in 1961. I don't ever become non-alcoholic. Last thing I'll say is, when Josh read How It Works, step one says, we admitted we were powerless over alcohol, our lives had become unmanageable. Kind of iffy. ABC. A makes it a little stronger. Says three pertinent ideas. A, that we were alcoholic and could not manage our own lives. And you know what? There is no place in the book that gives me that right back. I don't ever get the privilege of managing my own life back if I choose to stay here. I have to give that privilege to the man that I call sponsor. Now, today, I'm a little bit away from my last drink. I don't go from crisis to crisis. But I still call my sponsor and I write him a weekly letter and I lay it out there. I tell him all my goofy thinking and my goofy actions, because believe it or not, I still have them. And sometimes he gives me really bizarre answers. Johnny, this is what I'm thinking. Huh. That's it. Huh. Let me translate. What are you, an idiot? What we have here is a way out. If you're alcoholic, we have a way out. I haven't had a drink in a long time, but I'm an alcoholic. And if I stay away from you, if I don't do this program of action, if I don't stay close to my sponsor, if I don't tell the truth, if I walk away from a way of life which demands rigorous honesty, then if I'm walking away from that program of honesty, I'm walking to a drink. Because that's what happens to alcoholics. And sometimes the idea, here's what happens in my group. Some people don't drink. They know they're going to drink, and they'd rather not drink. So what do? They blow their brains out. Because the idea of drinking is it's more than they can bear. But they've decided not to be honest. I had a guy that I sponsored, and now he's off into such crazy stuff, and he's just removed himself. Nobody knows where he's at. Scary. It's powerful. Alcoholism, powerful illness. Book says it's cunning, baffling, and powerful. Certainly, I don't have any power over it. I couldn't keep myself sober. How can I help anybody? All we have is a set of steps, and we gather. I lied. I got one more thing to tell you. See, I still lie. I can't help myself. Sometimes my wife will ask me what I had for lunch. I can't tell her the truth because I'm supposed to be eating good stuff, and I can't tell her that. You know? I just had 3 Krispy Kreme donuts, baby. What do you think about that? Oop, I caught some Krispy Kreme eaters. Had a salad. Go back to that first word of the first step, we. You know, one of the things that I watched, you know, when I'm channel surfing, every so often I land on that Discovery Channel. And I love it when they show all the animals over there on the African safari. And one night I was watching that, and what I saw was a big, big pack of zebras. And they were just running through they were running in the desert. And they all were in a pack. They were running together. And when the pack went this way, they all went that way. And when they went that way, they all went that way. Nobody was asking, where are we going? They just went that way. Then they showed this. They showed out there in the brush, a couple of lions, tigers, zebra eaters. Alcoholism. We're the zebras. The pack goes this way. We're safe when we're together. What they showed was one stupid zebra decided to do it his way. All the zebras were over here eating the grass over here. But they had one zebra that I guess was like new. And decided he didn't need to follow his sponsor's direction. So he was, oh, sponsor, don't worry about it. I'm going to go over here. And the next thing you see is the tiger's eating his zebra butt. And now he's a bloody mass on the desert floor. And just, you know what? That's us. If I decide to not stay with the pack, I'm a dead man. I'm a dead zebra. The pack goes this way, I go. Now what I do is I fight my way into the middle, and I surround myself with a bunch of new fat zebras. So I'm in the middle, baby. I'm in the middle. And what I have found, there was a guy that I sponsor. We were at a book study, and he had a great analogy of in the middle. If you don't know what the middle is, you know, I'm following my sponsor. So I've got my hand reached out, and my sponsor's reaching back for me, so he's got my hand, he's leading me. My job is to reach back here and pull somebody else with me. If I'm reaching for my sponsor and I'm also trying to help somebody new, I am in the middle. If I'm not doing one of those, I am not in the middle. And I'm in danger. Thank you for the privilege of letting me be here. Thank you.
The format of tonight's meeting is group participation followed by a short coffee break, followed by our main speaker. We ask that you limit your comments to 2 or 3 minutes so that we can hear from as many people as possible. We also ask, in order to avoid interrupting the meeting and to show respect to those who are sharing, that you turn off all cell phones and pagers and refrain from getting coffee during the meeting. Before we begin participation, I'd like to thank our speaker, Dave B., for coming to speak for us tonight. With that, let's start with Steve.
Hi, my name is Steve Dine, and I'm an alcoholic. Hi, Steve. And my sobriety date is August 24, 2001. And I guess what's kind of been on my mind lately is just this idea of sponsorship, and thank God for sponsorship, because without it, you know, I know I wouldn't, without that part of the program, I wouldn't be alive today, I'm sure. That I'd be going on to that miserable inn they talk about or locked up permanently. And, you know, kind of had some goofy stuff going on at home. And you know, my sponsor doesn't seem to always have all the answers to make those kind of problems go away. But, you know, he does have the answers of, hey, why don't you go find a new guy to work with? And, you know, and it just happened that, you know, I went out to hear Danny speak on Saturday, and God put a new guy in my life, and I got to stay busy with him and go meet with him on Sunday and work with him on Monday. He kind of flaked out, but, you know, You know, it was real powerful for me to see his life, and I could just so identify with what was going on with him, you know, and being new, and you know, and just basically putting it to him, hey, if you want to keep doing things your way, you're gonna, you know, well, what happens when you keep doing things your way? Because I knew when I did things my way, I ended up drinking again, and you know, he could identify with that, and then when it finally, you know, when it finally came down to it, where I says, you know, if you just try our way for a while, you know, maybe it won't seem so difficult, and you know, he basically said, no, he's going to go with the convenience of the noon meetings. And I just that line, he's, you know, man, you got me between a rock and a hard place, you know, and I just knew exactly how he felt. And it was just amazing, you know, just having gone through that myself and trying to work with another guy. And Mike was right. You know, when I worked with that guy, you know, my problems were gone for a while, you know, and with that, I'll pass. Thanks.
Jerry.
Jerry!
My name is Jerry Korth. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Jerry.
I'm sober since November 7th, 2000. And Danny, happy birthday, wherever he is. There he is. Happy 10 years. It's been a pleasure getting to know you. What was I thinking? Well, Steve mentioned a couple things. Steve mentioned how a newcomer flaked out. Why are they always so many newcomers flake out like that? You know, they come in, they go. Got a nice crowd of Wilmer guys back there. You know, I mean, I guess you got to just go till you're done. Go till you're ready to stop, you know, and until you're convinced that your way isn't working and it won't, you know, isn't working anymore. And just stop fighting. And this is the easier, softer way. For an alcoholic, it may not look that way to someone who's come in who's looking for convenience, you know. Convenience and saving your life don't always go together, you know, but you got to do what you got to do. And what we do here is follow, you know, follow the people who have what we want and we'll get what they get, you know, and commit to a home group and commit to a sponsor and work this program, work the steps. And it's hard to know what sobriety is like from the other side, but no, I didn't think I was going to make it when I came around here in 2000. I really had my doubts I didn't do much except follow, trudge, you know, and it was inconvenient sometimes, and I was tired a lot, but in the first couple of years, it's only in the last little, you know, year or so that I've actually sat down and said, I'm sober. Now, the first couple of years, it was touch and go there. And it's only recently that I've actually been able to take a breath for a minute and realize maybe I'm going to make it for today, you know, and I'm so grateful that this program was still here waiting for me, even though I turned my back on it, but it was just here waiting for me, and there's no other way for somebody like me, you know, an arrogant, defiant alcoholic. There's no other place I can get it but here. Thanks.
Mitch.
Mitch. I'm Mitchell McCabe, alcoholic. And I've been sober since July 1st of 99. For that, I'm truly grateful. Danny, happy birthday. Dave, looking forward to hearing your talk. I've had a really good week. I think back to June of 99, and, you know, I was a failure at everything. My life was in shambles, and I wasn't afraid of dying. I was afraid of living. And I called a friend, said I needed some help, and he took me to a meeting, and I met my sponsor that I have today and got introduced to this group. And it's taken me a little over 4.5 years to do a lot of 9-step work and clean up a lot of stuff and rebuild my life. And it was all through the actions I was taught in here and working with other guys. I celebrated my 45th birthday Saturday, and I went out and I bought a new car and it's just like things like that's the first time I've ever had a new car. And, uh, And one of the things that, you know, that was important was I wanted to get this little sports car or something, but what I did is I made sure I got a car that I could pick up new guys and take them to a meeting. You know, that's not something that I would have thought of before. And anyway, you know, I'm really grateful for this group, and I'm grateful for the people that have gone before me. And I think back about Dave's sponsor, my great-grand sponsor, talking about if you keep doing what you're doing, you're going to keep getting what you're getting. And so, you know, I think I'm going to stay. Glad to be here.
Mike. My name is Mike Rafakis. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Mike.
I'm sober since March 1st of 1996. I probably should sit down. But I'm glad to be here. I'm here for really two reasons. Well, I mean, other than the fact that I'm an alcoholic, and I'm hopeless and desperate and want to be with people like you. I'm here because it's my good friend Danny's birthday, and I'm excited to be here, and it's his 10th. And that's a big deal. And I'm happy to be here and to be a part of that. And the other reason I'm here is because I'm looking forward to hearing Dave talk. You know, I love hearing solid AA talks. And Tim and I were talking about this before the meeting. You know, last week, a guy that Mike sponsors came over and talked to our group. And he talked about alcoholism. And he talked about sponsorship and recovery. And he talked with a little bit of an edge. And I love that. And then we had a talk last night that was talked about alcoholism and sponsorship and recovery in the steps. But I just felt like I was going to fall asleep halfway through the talk. And it was a good, solid talk. And that's probably but maybe about me because I'm selfish and self-centered. But, you know, I just like being challenged a little bit and having somebody make me think about the fact that, you know, I have a fatal malady. And my sponsor reminded me of that a couple days ago. My wife and I are buying a house, first house we've ever bought, and we've got a contract on this house. And the mortgage deal was not going well, and it was falling apart. And I called him up, and you know, I was trying to exert my control over this and my will to make this deal work. And I'm frantic. And I call him up, and when I call him up frantic, he laughs at me and pokes fun at me. Routinely, and he's poking at me, and he goes, Mike, you're going to wind up homeless, and I'm going to throw him. Maybe I need to throw my sleeping bag in the gutter next to you to get a little bit of that edge back, he said. I'm like, yeah, okay. And then he reminded me, he said, Mike, our lives as ex-problem drinkers depend upon our constant thought of others and how we can help meet their needs. He said, just quit worrying about that. Just go to the meeting and go see what you can do for the new man. Go show up early and quit worrying about this. And so I did that, and I'm glad that I have a sponsor today that reminds me that my life is, you know, I have some of those gifts in my life, but it's not about that because those things aren't what's important because I'm on borrowed time anyway because I don't deserve to be really even alive, let alone have, you know, family and friends and sobriety. So I'm glad to be here. Thanks for calling me.
All right, Chris.
My name is Chris Burt, and I am an alcoholic. And I have been sober since December 20th of 1988. Welcome, visitors, guests. I was sitting here thinking, wondering, you know, maybe it'd be your first time coming to an AA meeting. You're wondering what brings us all here on a Thursday night to do all this goofiness. And what we have is alcoholism, like the book describes. There are several different types of drinkers. It talks about a moderate drinker, somebody that can drink and put it down without any problem. They may feel it after a couple of drinks and they stop, you know. And then it talks about the heavy drinker and the person that may appear to be alcoholic, but when he's faced with, you know, Susie's going to leave him, or the doctor says you're going to, you know, blow your liver out, he stops, and he stays stopped. And then the book talks about the real alcoholic, which what we are. When we start drinking, we develop a phenomenon of craving that sets off, we don't know what's going to happen when we start drinking. We end up in strange places with strange people and not sure how we got there. And we also have obsession of the mind when the alcohol is not in our body that causes us to start drinking the alcohol again. So that's kind of a little, summary of why we come here, because we've been in such a desperate place to get sober that we've tried our way and it doesn't work. And it's good to be here tonight. Thank you.
Now, Danny.
Hi, I'm Danny Crawl Alcoholic.
Hi, Danny.
And I've been sober since April 24th in 94. And David, thank you for coming to talk tonight. Looking forward to hearing you. And also welcome to, all the, friends and family and guests that are here tonight. It's, this is a very special night. And, having you here makes it, even more special. And I'm just excited about the rest of the meeting, and that's all I've got for right now.
How about Tim?
I'm Tim Moore. I'm an alcoholic. And my sobriety day is June 14th, 1994. And grateful for that. And Dave, looking forward to hearing your story. Thanks for coming down. Welcome to our visitors and family members. Victor and I were reading in the car on the way over here in the big book about me, about the destruction that I caused in the family. It talks in there about me being a tornado roaring through the lives of others. And, when I'm drinking, I am not a good family man. I cannot be there. I can't be a good employee. I can't do what I say what I'm going to do because I started drinking and I just don't know what's going to happen. And, it's amazing that we come here together tonight and looking around, seeing the family members and the friends here together and to help celebrate Danny's birthday and come to an AA meeting. Happy birthday, Danny. On Sunday night, Victor and I were at a meeting and a new man was there, his first meeting. And we got to go back to his place and dump out all the vodka, and pour out all the booze. And that's the same thing that they did for me whenever I was looking for help. I called AA, and they came over and helped me do that because I don't think I could have done that by myself, And there was a certain amount level of angst that he had whenever we dumped out that last bottle of vodka and he put it into the huge trash bag full that we had. Put it in there. It's like to let that thing go. And I know exactly how he felt, that for me to do that whenever I called AA, I couldn't do it anymore, And I had to have some help in order to get sober and to start something new. And, and I had to have a sponsor who could help me with that, someone who had been there, had had the experience, who could lead me in trying to get sober. And I'm just thankful to be here and looking forward to the rest of our meeting.
Mike.
Thanks, Ronnie. I'm Mike Erickson. I'm alcoholic. July 19th, 87 is my sobriety date. And Dave, thanks for coming. I'm looking forward to hearing my sponsor talk. Be interesting. I've never heard him talk before. Danny, happy birthday. And welcome to all our visitors and family members and Josh's parents, Cynthia, see your parents here, and all the friends. That's a neat deal. What you see happen, it's funny, I was kind of thinking about this, is that if you ever watch Seinfeld or Saturday Night Live, you see them depict skits of us, right? You see these bunch of goofs sitting around a circle going, my name's Jim and I'm an alcoholic. they're all kind of smarmy little, and that's not far from the truth. Because that's really pretty much what we are. We're a bunch of smarmy, what we've assembled here is a bunch of losers, a bunch of failures at every aspect of our lives, pretty much. A bunch of guys that when we try and run things on our own unaided will, the best result we turn up with is drunk. And that's the way I lived my life for a lot of years. Just systematically running through people's lives and tearing their hearts out, getting drunk, I'm a guy that, you know, Chris talked about this phenomenon of craving, and that's what happens to me once I start to drink. I develop this phenomenon of craving, and I don't even know I have it. That's the scary thing. I have no idea. I have this thing. I take one drink, and it sets off this craving in me that condemns me to drink another one and condemns me to drink another one. And I would swear to you on my life that I'd never start drinking and say, tonight I'm going to get drunk and I'm going to cheat on my girlfriend. Tonight I'm going to get drunk and I'm going to spend my entire paycheck. Tonight I'm going to get drunk and crash my car. I would always go out and say, I'm going to go out and have a couple drinks. But I didn't know that this thing would happen to me. I had no idea it would happen to me. That when I took that first drink, it would condemn me to drink until one of three things happened, until I run out, until I pass out, or until I black out. I had no idea I had this thing. How could I know? It's not like, you know, mom and dad ever sat me down and said, Mike, you know, if you start drinking, you may develop this phenomenon of craving, and it may cause you to drink against your will. I had no idea. I mean, no idea. I had no idea. I just wanted to have a drink. There's something I knew about it. Something I knew about when I drink, it made me feel good. It made me feel different. What it did was it seemed to allow me to relax, and it seemed to allow me to fit into a world which I don't feel like I fit into. It seemed to allow me to become the very thing I always wanted to be. The problem is I don't make real good decisions when I drink. Really don't make solid decisions, and my problems just day after day compounded and got worse and worse and became really difficult to solve. And living life that way for year after year after year, one day I wake up and I look in the mirror and I cannot stand what I've become, knowing full well that I shouldn't be what I am. Having a code of morals and having a code of philosophies and having the desire to live right and do things right, and no matter how great I want to, I can't do it. I drink. I get loaded. That's what I do. And so gradually what happened is I lived long enough and hard enough like that till I wound up at the subtle urgings of a lot of people at an AA meeting. And what happened to me is a man like this guy here, Dave, sat down and talked to me about what the disease of alcoholism was. And I found myself sitting across from him going, how do you know? How do you know this stuff about me? And the natural question that followed on from that is, you seem to know something about me. What do I have to do to become like you? And that's what this deal is all about. It's monkey see, monkey do in here. Nothing more. That's all we are. It's so simple, it's scary. It's really so simple what we do in here. So simple, it's scary. It's just monkey see, monkey do. And for the last 16 years, I've been on the coattails of a guy like this man. And the great news for me today is I am an alcoholic that does not drink. Which is an amazing statement. Because most alcoholics that are like me will die drunk. Still today, in a world where I have all this technology and all this science, most alcoholics will still die drunk. Yet I have the privilege to walk free under the grace of a loving God because of what goes on in this room. There's magnificent power. And Seinfeld and Saturday Night Live can make all the fun of us they want. I could really care less, you know. And I'm glad they do, right? I'm glad they do. Maybe they're getting a little publicity up for us, that if you ever get goofy enough to be one of these guys, come here, you'll fit in, right? And that's what we do. We just got a bunch of people that drink themselves to death and fit in. I'm glad to be here. Thanks.
There is no smoking in the church, so if you smoke, please do so outside and use the bug cans provided. We'll now take a 10-minute coffee break before our main...